Hello, and welcome to Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. I'm Steph, and together with my co-hosts, Abby, Jen, and Nicole, we'll be rewatching episodes of Avatar and discussing them each week. This week, we'll be talking about Book 2, Chapter 14, City of Walls and Secrets. In this episode, from the Avatar Wiki, Aang and the rest of the group arrive in Ba Sing Se to find Appa and inform the Earth King about the solar eclipse, but they are constantly hindered by their tour guide, Judy. They soon learn that any mention of war is forbidden and enforced by the Dai Li, the secret police of Ba Sing Se, and their corrupt leader, Long Feng, who appears to know something about Appa. Elsewhere, Jet repeatedly tries and fails to gather evidence that Zuko and Iroh are firebenders. His last attempt, challenging Zuko to a sword fight, ends in his own arrest and subsequent brainwashing by the Dai Li. So, fun fact, the voice of Long Feng is Mr. Krabs.
Oh my god. It sounded familiar.
Whoa. That's just, I was like, that was the most fun fact I found out when I was looking stuff up about this episode. The wow. range, the absolute range of that man.
That's amazing.
I was not expecting that.
Oh, Clancy Brown is his name.
That makes me uncomfortable. I just want him to be like, money, 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 yeah. money. What rage, indeed.
Wow. Yeah.
We also had another visit from Teen Titans Robin.
Yes, this time as like a nerd.
Yeah, a nerdy student at the university.
I'm like, they made that poor boy drop his scrolls all over the ground.
Yeah.
In his haste to get away.
Oh my god. Mr. Krabs.
Yeah, I know. I was like, should I save this for later? Or I was like, should I just drop this bombshell?
It's gotta open with, yeah, open with a bang.
Yeah.
I haven't even heard like Mr. Krabs' voice in a very long time.
Oh.
Like, I don't watch SpongeBob on the
yeah,
regular.
I mean, me either, but.
Yeah. But you but just like, remember.
I just remember.
Yeah.
I can't do impressions, so I'm not going to. But you should check it out on YouTube or something later. Very different voice, very different characters in general.
Yeah.
I mean, generally greedy and uses people. That's sort of.
I mean, I guess, but like.
Same energy.
There's different, like, levels. I don't know. This episode was very, like, creepy.
Yeah.
No, I did not remember that all of this happens in one episode, and that it's the first episode of, like, Ba Sing Se arc. A lot of it I remembered as taking longer to happen, but it did not.
Interesting.
Yeah. I guess they gotta, like, let you know what the deal is in this city, like, real quick.
It's a great opening to the city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the subway went away and Judy's face with her weird ass smile, I was like, this is weird. I feel like this is the first time I've seen this episode. So it was just like, oh my god, everyone's brainwashed.
Yeah.
And this is just like all the censorship. It was so wild.
Yeah.
Ew. Yeah, the music they played when Judy first appeared, it was so creepy, her appearance.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the music of it had a very, like, it brought to mind horror movies with children, like horror movie children, you know, because of that whole, like, the little light tinkling with discordant kind of stuff going on at the same time. That's always, like, they do that. They play it in, like, nurseries and stuff like that are all dark and cobwebby.
Yeah. In the art book, they said that her design and personality was based off of their infinitely chipper line producer Miken Wong, and I'm just like, maybe don't say personality, like that seems a little
I know offensive. Especially because, like, is it really a personality when it's like an affectation that this person is putting on because they're like brainwashed and scared for their life?
Right. This person had like a lobotomy basically.
I mean, when she kept on like smiling and ignoring everything that Sokka was saying to turn to like
tour guide Barbie.
You know, her duties. You know, I was just like, so Judy is actually just a customer service worker who's lost her soul and no longer feels emotion because of all the customer service. Like,
relatable.
Oh my god, too real.
Oh my gosh. It was so creepy.
Yeah. It's like, she is really creepy and unsettling, but then at the same time at the party when she was like panicking because the gang was there, I kind of felt bad for her because you can tell she's also really scared. And then that they, like, punctuate the episode with the second Judy.
Yeah.
It's, like, super, like, you already know that something is wrong.
Yeah.
But it's even, like, beyond, I think, what you expect. Especially because it's also intercut with scenes of them brainwashing Jet. Oh,
poor Jet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It all escalated at the last, like, 5 minutes of the show.
Like, the two storylines came together, like, really well with that like, cross-cutting. Because, it was creepy because it's, like, we saw, like, the neighbor Pong was, like, nervous. Mm-hmm. It isn't her fault, but then also, like, she's, like, sabotaging their search for Appa.
Right.
And, like, by, like, not wanting to acknowledge that there are, like, dark underbellies and black markets in their city and stuff. Mm-hmm. And just, like, ignoring all of the, like, classist issues that the gang is bringing up on the tour. Where they're just like, what's happening? And she's just like, everybody is safe. Everybody is free. And I'm just like,
It's like the whole episode, they just slowly wear down the veneer of the city. And then at the end, it's like completely no pretense anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I got the vibes of her being also scared, even like before the party too, on the tour. Sometimes when Sokka would ask questions, like when she would redirect, there would be this thing that she did with like her eyes. I say this as if she's an actress. It's animated. A thing the animators had her do with where her smile would get even just a tiny bit more fixed, and her, like, she would get kind of like nervous for a second looking and like shift her gaze and look out the window. Like she was scrambling for a second to redirect. And then she would like start another. Isn't history great?
I was gonna say, I imagine she probably hasn't dealt with too many guests that were like this pushy too.
Yeah.
Where it's like she's probably used to people like not even like reading the room, but kind of like also kind of being in that like similar where it's like everybody's happy to play this act and like play the part.
Yeah.
And like pretend even if they do actually know stuff. Mm-hmm. And then they're just like, well, no. And it's just like, I don't know. Like, why are you making me have to do my job, like, harder kind of thing?
I mean, I feel like life in Ba Sing Se, the refugees probably, you know, they don't get greeted by Judy's, I think. They just, you know, they just get into the city. So the fact that the gang got shuttled straight to the upper ring probably played a large part in this, where they stand out so much. Because generally, by the time people get to the upper ring, or the middle ring, I guess, because the upper ring is probably only reserved for one percenters, they know what the city's about. And I don't think anyone coming in just kind of gets told. Their neighbor almost seemed to be kind of doing them a favor by telling them when he wasn't supposed to tell them.
Yeah.
But they probably all go in, and then they see things like the thing with Jet and Lee and Mushi happen on the streets, and everyone just kind of learns that it's something that you keep your mouth shut about, and they, like, their fear just grows over the years.
Yeah.
I feel like for me, this episode was, like, extra creepy, like, in hindsight, because I feel like even when it first came out, it, you know, it's, like, social media and, like, how much companies, like, information and like, privacy issues have grown exponentially since then, and, like, this almost, maybe it would have felt more, like, ridiculous back then, but then it's, like, nowadays it's just, like, no, where it's, like, people, like, they're, you know, every one of these big networks has, like, a profile on you, and they have info about you, and, like, I know, you know, China was, they had, like, that, like, social currency, like, social points and stuff for faux pas, and it's just, like, I'm, like, I don't know, it's just, like, more creepy as an older person.
Because, you know, it's, like, not entirely far-fetched that some sort of system like this exists, like, with the constant censorship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even just, like, everybody's willingness to go along with it. And I'm not even – I can't say that I totally fault people either, because it is, like, a self-preservation thing, obviously. But it's just – yeah, it's just so creepy.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it had, like, a really classic setup of a thriller. I thought of Get Out, where – the person who knows something's up gets silenced. I think this, in this case, it was Jet. You know, for once, his paranoias were actually legitimate. Yeah. And yet all of the systems were preventing him from making that come to light. So he looked like a crazy person when he actually would unfold an enemy within the territory. Yeah. And then, you know, Sokka just constantly being like, what the fuck is wrong with everybody? Like, why don't they want this information? And then just seeing all the people just creepily just smile and go along with it because they don't know. It was very, like, weird. I liked this episode, but I didn't like it because of how it made me feel. So I was like, this is, like, very thriller. And it, like, ended on such a cliffhanger. And I was like, ugh, I want to watch the next episode so bad. But I know that it's not even, like, a continuation because it's, like, a...
No.
Damn.
Just get, like, a bunch of little, like, fun stuff next episode.
Mini stories.
Yeah. Fun stuff? Is that what you want to call all of it, Stephanie?
Okay. All right, like, most of it is fun.
Yeah.
Let's just, like, you know, we'll get there when we get there.
At first, I was thinking about, obviously, it's, like, very classist. And then I was thinking about, like, I mean, I was thinking about capitalism, but then I was like, oh, but I guess this is, like more, this is, like, feudalism. More, I mean, I guess maybe both. I don't even know. But just, like, the literal physical spaces, and it's not like those things don't exist everywhere, too. That's literally, like, redlining and, like, fleeing the cities to go to the suburbs and all of that stuff. And, like, all of the like, things that happen because of that, that, like, continue to disrepair, like, certain locations. But it was just, like, creepy. And then the outer ring was craftsmen and artisans and new arrivals and, like, very clearly, like, poor people.
So immigrants and manual laborers.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, it was, like, it was so, not funny, but it was, like, it was interesting to see how they, like, worded stuff. Yeah. And then the middle ring was shops, restaurants, the university was there, the financial district, town hall. And then they were saying the upper, like, she straight up was, like, oh, it's our most important citizens. And it was just, like, damn, like, so, like, she just, like, said it kind of thing. It was, like, so creepy. And then the whole thing with the Dai Li, the cultural authority, guardians of all our traditions. The thing that was fucked up about that for me was... They said how the Earth King was busy running the most important city in the world. And I was just like, doesn't he run a whole fucking kingdom? And, like, they're so clear. Like, you know, I just immediately felt very bad for everybody else who has been, like, affected by the war in this country, too. Like, I don't know if everybody outside of Ba Sing Se pays taxes or not. But I'm just like, your king is doing, like, shit for you. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the king is, like, not... aware of literally anything. Like, he hasn't been brainwashed, but I mean, I guess we don't know about that technically
yet. Yeah, we don't know that yet.
But it's just not a good situation. And then there's the implication that Ba Sing Se has been this way for a very long time because Aang was like, this is why I never came here. So even 100 years ago, they had this segregation before the war even started. And I feel like the war and the influx of refugees from other parts of the Earth Kingdom probably exacerbated the issue and, like, probably overpopulation in the lower ring. Because I feel like not even just the class separation aspect of it, but, like, to maintain the facade that there's nothing wrong, they can't let refugees into the upper rings because where they, like Jet said it, like, where else are all these refugees coming from, you know? I mean, it's just, like, not pleasant to think about.
This is such a depressing episode.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I was definitely thinking about other animations that had similar city setups like this. And, you know, the first thing I thought of was, like, Attack on Titan because there's, like, actual walls. And there's, like, a lot of, like, implications with those walls. But it's, you know, it's, like, you put the poor people on the outside and then... as the defenses or the enemies get closer, like, the richest people are protected in the center. And I also feel like similarly, the Lord of the Rings series was kind of like that. I don't know if I remember that correctly, but I guess that's just how it's always been. Just, you know, the rich want to just protect themselves at the expense of other people. And it's, there's a different version of like that in modern times, but yeah, it just is never gonna... I don't know, humans are just the same even in fictional
worlds. I was gonna say, like, humans are gonna do what humans do. It's, like, depressing, but, you know. I don't know where we go from here.
on the more lighthearted, slightly funny, still a look at classism aspect of the episode. How about Toph?
Toph.
That was fun.
She was so cute.
Did you notice that she flicked her snot up onto the ceiling?
Yes.
And then it fell
on the ceiling, and then it fell on Sokka's face.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I left a note, and it was like, the boogers.
Yeah.
I was like, ugh.
Oh, man. I was like, I don't remember. Like, you know, when the first time I was watching it today, I didn't remember that happened. So when I saw it, I, like, actually laughed out loud. I'm like, do I have childish humor? Maybe.
And I love when she said, you don't have manners.
I liked her, like, we're talking about use of language, how creepy it was when Ba Sing Se and all their, you know, the cultural authority and the cultural minister as their pretty words for, you know, maintaining a fascist state.
Yeah.
I wrote down something like, that's some vocabulary near Toph's line, too, when she was telling them, she was like, please, it won't work. Like, sneaking in. And she was like, real society crowd would pick you out in a second. I was like, oh, real society.
Yeah.
We've seen it a couple times, too, where she's like, she's also tried to throw around, like, her status to, like, get her way. It makes me think of the thing that Wang Shitan said in the library, where it's like, oh, where it's like, we're okay with her doing that because she's, they're the good guys and they're doing the right thing.
Right.
But it was like, you know, where he's just like, you think you're the first people to justify their thing? And I'm just like, Toph is also being a classist, privileged person, But it's like, but she's using her privilege for good. But it's like, but she's still participating in this thing. And it's like, I feel like we all deal with that, of like, you have to engage with capitalism to exist in a capitalist society, no matter how icky you feel.
She's sort of one of those like rich kids who thinks that the entire system is stupid and wrong and rejects it in her personal life, but doesn't really, I mean, you could say that she works against it by teaming up with the Avatar to end the war, but that's a very big scale kind of like,
yeah, but it's like she still actively like benefits from it.
It's I was about to say, it's not like she's going to protests and stuff, but like, I don't think they really have them.
Occupy Ba Sing Se.
I mean, it's true, she's just using her knowledge of how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's just like, this is a good way for them to, I mean, this is something that's always pretty cool when children's shows are able to put in these sort of greater world ideas in ways that are easily understandable and digestible to their audience, and in ways that even behind the veneer of like a fictional story, it makes people more willing to accept what we're being told. Like, we're like, well, you know, clearly these are our heroes and Ba Sing Se is evil. So I feel comfortable with feeling like, oh yeah, it's real messed up that the first rule of society is don't talk to the commoners. Even though in real society, it's also like that, and people like to ignore that part.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like this show could be taught in, like, a social studies class or something.
I mean, it does touch on a lot of...
I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Yeah. A lot of varied, important topics.
Yeah. You know, we've mentioned it, and it's known that it's, like, this city was inspired by China. You know, in the art book they mentioned they went on a trip to Beijing for the inspiration, and it's like definitely like more heavily influenced by China. I think, what is it, like the Forbidden City, that it's like the main capital building and everything. And it's just like, I don't know, it's just creepy. I'm sorry. I keep saying the same thing.
It is creepy.
Yeah,
I guess like one of the lighter parts of the episode as well was, I mean, to an extent, was Iroh and Zuko working at the tea shop.
Yeah.
You know, the comical moments with the apron not fitting. And I was like, can't you just let the apron,
be
like,
loose?
Do you have to tie the apron? I don't know the logistics of using an apron, but Iroh being pissed at how bad the tea is. And he's like, this is
hot,
just
leaf hot juice.
Leaf juice. And then Zuko's like, that's what all tea is.
Oh my god,
that made me laugh a lot.
I was laughing because Iroh, what did he was just like, how could someone from my own family say something
so horrible?
I'm like, do you not have, like, are you that non-self-aware? Like,
it was so funny. I was like, that really, that was the most horrible thing someone in your family's ever said.
And I was like, your grandfather literally is responsible for the genocide of an entire nation. Like,
read the room, uncle.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so
And then when
funny.
He was like, we're gonna have to make some major changes around here, and Jet like freaked out. He's like, what? Major changes? You mean like conquering the entire city? Like,
oh my god.
Oh, poor Jet. He really, it was like, I'm sorry for this reference. It was like just like Harry Potter book 6 Jet, you know, this whole time. He's like, they're evil, and everyone's like, you're crazy. But he's right.
Yeah.
He's right. Poor Jet.
For once, you're right.
Yeah. Although, I don't know what exactly, they were like, he was like, okay, fine, I'll get proof. But his proof was just going to be him personally seeing them firebending the tea in their home, like.
Yeah, right. I was really frustrated at that, because it's like, I get, you know, he had to, the plot had to continue, but it was just like, dude, like, you're not going to bust them after like a day. Mm-hmm. Like these types of things take a while, and then you're going to need more proof, and it's going to be, you're going to need more than just your word.
Yeah.
And like, but yeah, he literally just busts into the shop where I'm just like, good ideas, poor execution, yeah, kind of thing.
I guess his thought was like, Uncle Iroh having cold tea and then suddenly having hot tea isn't like solid enough. Because even, you know, the patrons of the tea shop are like, he works at a tea shop. Like when he said it, because it sounds ridiculous. But if he were to see with his own eyes them literally firebend, that sounds less crazy if you try to tell like somebody about it. We're like, I saw this man firebend.
Right.
I assume that he assumed that Zuko would have been one of those benders that relied like solely on their bending as for their fighting.
Right.
So then they were like, oh, well, I could like force it out of him, mm-hmm, but then Zuko can actually handle himself more. And I feel like he also knows that it's that much more important to do that here too.
Right.
Versus like, like in Zuko alone, where he eventually like lost his patience and then he firebent at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say, by the way, it was so funny that, like, there's literally some, like, cops sitting in this coffee shop eating their donuts, and they're gonna take care of this guy causing a riot, and then Zuko just comes up, grabs their weapon. He's like, I'll handle this.
Yeah.
Like, he's been working in food service for, like, 2 days, and he's already ready to kill a customer.
Oh my god. I saw a funny like meme of that where it's just like one day, like everybody's fantasy, like working in customer service, and it's just like one day of working, him pulling out like two knives, like or swords.
That's so funny.
Oh man.
It's like, I hate Jet, but it was just so sad to watch his like maniacal obsession. Even Smellerby and Longshot trying to intervene. Yeah. Like, you're obsessed and you need to stop. And that was just so sad.
Yeah.
Like, Jet, we know the Fire Nation killed your parents.
Yeah.
But like, this is too much.
But he was right.
I know. That's,
I know.
But that's why I find.
I know, but this is the hill you're going to die on. Like, you've made it to safety. You were hell bent on changing, but I don't know. I don't know. I felt
like
bad.
The pain of being the friends who actively get together and try to have an intervention, and then the person just continues on their path and the consequences come to bite them.
Like, immediately.
And you have to watch it happen. You're like, I tried, but I don't.
Yep. I think I said something similar last episode where I'm like, I feel very bad for Jet because he wants, like, he's there with the intention of starting over. And I feel like if he hadn't seen Uncle heat the tea, he might have actually had that chance to, like, become a more well-adjusted person in the city. Mm-hmm. And instead, it, like, you're addicted to something and you're, like, trying to quit. And then something just, like, pushes you right back at it. And then, you know.
Like, it's sad. And I understand why, because trauma works in mysterious ways. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, it's sad that he couldn't even acknowledge or like just like accept, or not even accept, but it's just like, yes, like there are probably firebenders who are like have smuggled their way in here, snuck their way in here, and like if they're not causing problems, like, and they're not affecting you, like just keep trying to live your own life. And like he just couldn't let that go. And I understand that, because he's like, if they're Fire Nation, like I don't care if they're innocent or not, like they're guilty by association, therefore like they don't deserve the same second chance as me. And it's just like, well, cool, but like you're throwing away your second chance because you're obsessed. And it's like, it's just sad. But I can't say that I would like know. Well, I don't even know, because again, it's like it's not like he even knows who they are or anything.
Right.
I mean, if you're talking about having time, having the chance to sort of heal, is the thinking here like, because it was clear that he was going to keep on trying to hang around Zuko.
Right.
If he hadn't seen Uncle Firebend. So what? Hang around, get to know them, try to start a new life in Ba Sing Se as just like a commoner, and then eventually find out, because he would.
If he had the slightest inclination, like, I feel like the best thing he could have done, like, they could have literally just been like, let's move to the other side of the ring and, like, just not be near these people. Whether they're good or bad, whether they're plotting something or not, it's just like, I don't want to know. Like, ignorance is bliss. Of course, they didn't know he'd become that obsessive.
Are you talking about Jet and Smellerby and Longshot?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm saying,
I don't feel like they would ever have done that, though.
I know. That's why bad stuff happens. Because he, like, couldn't let it go, is all I'm saying.
Right. Sorry. I was, like, I got confused.
Nicole was talking about if he hadn't seen him firebend, what yeah. might have happened, because he would have still hung out with Zuko. He would have tried to hang out.
He still would have found out eventually, yeah, I'm thinking, probably, because he would have still been trying to hang out with Zuko.
Yeah.
So is the thinking that if he had more time before finding out, that he would have had time to try to have a better reaction, or would it never have worked? Like,
oh, I see.
Would he have had more time to get to know them as people and to be like, but like, I feel like
I think he probably would have reacted the same way. The issue with like where yeah. Jet couldn't let it go is I think he has a bit of a hero complex where like he created a community with all those other orphan children and he was trying to like keep everybody safe. He wanted to rid the valley they were living in of the Fire Nation. Like, I think he has it in his head, like, I need to help. I need to like save people. So that's why I feel like he would never really be able to let it go.
Right.
Because he feels a sense of like responsibility, I think. But
yeah,
it's just, I don't know, it's sad. Like, I do feel really bad for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. Because it's not like he would have made a normal life for himself, because he kept talking about the Freedom Fighters. That was like their hint to us last episode that even if he hadn't seen them firebend, he still would have been like this. Mm-hmm. Just something else would have gotten him in trouble. Like, even if he hadn't, maybe he would have been picked up by the Dai Li without ever accusing Zuko or Iroh of being firebenders, just for causing chaos in general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's like every plot line in this episode was depressing.
Yes. Yeah, like, I think Abby said, like, at the end of the episode, it was, like, really dark. Where there was, yeah. like, levity in the beginning and middle, and there were, like, a lot of jokes.
You could tell, like, they definitely were aware of that, yeah, because they had all these, like, there were so many little moments in this episode.
Yes.
Just to, like, yeah, it needed those little pops in the stories, because the stories themselves were just, like, so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, little gags, like, like, the boogies, and then even, like, Aang and Sokka, like, bashing their heads together. Yeah. Like,
and playing, like, their version of rock, paper, scissors.
They were adorable.
Yeah. And then, like, oh my god, when Sokka flicked Aang in the head when Aang, like, was looking at Katara in the in the dress.
I know, I was like, this is such a good episode for, like, Aang and Sokka's friendship.
Yeah. And it was, like, it was nice to see Katara and Toph, like, sort of in the, like, I want to believe they had fun getting ready for the party together. Like, I don't know, but maybe.
Yeah. You think so? I feel like Toph would hate that.
Yeah.
She looked so cute, though.
Yeah.
She did look cute. And, like, the fact that Katara named
her Dung.
Named Toph Dung. I'm like, really, Katara? Like, that's what you're going to play a little fucking shit.
I know,
like,
yeah.
That's kind of fucked up.
It really brought to mind the Lee and Mushi thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Which was also, in a way, you know, it's sort of like, once again, getting us as the audience to think of them and Zuko and Iroh as, like, on the same level of, like, also humans, even if they're on the other side, technically.
Mm. Yeah.
I know. She gave herself, like, a nice name, Hua Mei.
And then she was.
And Dung. I forgot what is wrong with you? You couldn't think of, like, another generic nice name?
Right.
No.
No. Oh my god. They picked, like, their idea of trying to get in was a good idea. It was just the timing was so bad that it was long playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doomed to fail.
Sokka and Aang's ideas to get in, though.
Oh, I mean, they got in.
We dress Momo as a ghost.
Yeah.
Cause a diversion, but then blow a hole in the wall anyway.
Oh my god, when freaking Aang spilled the water on that woman and then airbended to dry her, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Fucking
water out of her.
Just like, oh my god, Aang, you foolish, foolish boy. Like,
yeah, my note was, really, Aang, what the fuck? Like, you tried so hard to fucking sneak in, and now you're gonna blow it
immediately. And then they're just like, just roll with it. And then he makes, like, a giant rainbow ball in the middle. Yeah. And I'm just like, you guys.
He's like playing with Bosco.
Judy revealed baldly that she is just as scared as everyone else. And they respond by immediately blowing everything.
I feel like, haven't they done a gag or something like that before where someone got wet and then instead of pulling the water off of them, they, like, he airbended them dry?
He always does that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't. I mean, that lady seemed fine with it once she realized who it was.
Yeah, this is bragging rights for forever, right? You go to all your high society parties and you're just like, not only did I meet the Avatar.
He spilled water on me. And then
the Avatar personally air bent me dry from some spilled tea by a clumsy busboy. I'm not going to mention that they were the same person.
Another one of the gags that I liked was the fact that, so that party was centered around the bear. Mm-hmm. But then when Katara was just like, oh no, it's just a bear. Yeah. And then they kept on trying to figure out if they're hybrid bears. They're like, no, it's just a bear. And they're like, this is so weird.
No, they were like, this is so weird. And I was like, but because of all the animal facts, we know that you run into mundane animals everywhere you go.
I was thinking that. I'm like, because of the podcast and how much attention I've been paying to the animals, I know that there are non-hybrid animals.
Yeah.
But somebody online said something like, most of the non-hybrid animals you see are small animals. Mm. So, like, maybe it's very rare for it to be, like, a large animal that is not a hybrid.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean,
so, like, you don't even notice them.
Maybe also regular animals are less common because it's, like, they're, like, genetically not as healthy and, like, they don't have as many cool features, like, evolutionary-wise.
Yeah.
So then they're like, wow, like, there's actually real bears still? Like, huh.
That's so funny.
And it's like, yeah, it's rare. That's why a king has one. Like, huh.
And I love those two guys where he's like, you have no idea what I had to do to get to sit this close to the bear. Shut up.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, that the bear joke is like, I forgot that happened in this episode. I was like, the bear joke.
It's so funny.
It was really funny.
I also do have two animal facts. Yay. They're both the birds that were in that. I don't even know. What do we call that store they were
it's
in?
It's like a pet shop, right?
I guess it was a pet shop. I don't know.
Yeah.
Exotic animal trader.
Yeah, an animal trader. Who wouldn't give up the black market information, which is fair. So there's the cat owl, and it lives in the forests of the Earth Kingdom and the Fire Nation, and it can be kept as a pet. It is based on the facial appearance of a great horned owl, and it has a feline tail. So the superstition is that it's bad luck if a cat owl, like, crosses your path. And apparently the Chinese word for owl literally translates into a cat-headed eagle. I need to verify that. I don't know if that's true with the characters. And then the phrase, two cat owls, one stone, is the Avatar equivalent of killing two birds with one stone.
Oh my god.
Too much. And then there's, like, a sparrowkeet. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is a hybrid animal. They just blended two birds together.
It's so just I like don't really count that.
Like, it's literally just a bird. So it can become rowdy when its food is eaten. So that's what Momo was disturbing. And it resembles the Carolina parakeet. It's a mix between a sparrow and a parakeet and has orange dots on the cheeks, much like those seen in cockatiels.
I'll say in the very first shot of this episode, maybe not the very first, no, I think it was. There was a like an antelope that looked like it had like a fox tail.
Yeah.
So I got excited about that one.
It was cute.
But they didn't like.
I must have missed it.
Yeah. It was just like, it literally looked like an antelope. And then as the camera moved up, it like had like a fox tail.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was it. Like everything else was like normal.
Interesting. I'm going to look that up as we continue to speak. Oh.
Yeah.
But I only noticed that because I was like, it has a fox tail. I bet it's a fox. And I got excited.
I Googled owl in Chinese and it is. It's like cat. And then I can't actually read the like simplified characters. So I don't know what the second one is. But it's probably what you said, which is like, what was it? Owl faced?
Cat faced.
Cat faced, I meant. Cat faced something. Eagle? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is eagle.
Yeah, it's the cat-headed eagle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cat-headed. Yeah. I assume that the middle character is head. I know that the first and the last one are cat and eagle.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't read the simplified.
Confirm that the fox antelope is the proper name of it. Is that what you called it? The antelope fox or the fox antelope?
I don't remember, but yeah.
Yeah. It's an herbivore and it's an antelope with the fox. They're just becoming less creative as we go. Like I was like,
if we were ranking all the episodes with like new animals, it's just like, what are you guys like? You had literally like a bird, a cat bird, an antelope with a tail, and a bear, and just a normal bear.
It's not doing it this episode.
Speaking of like not doing it, kind of again, I was annoyed with the Netflix subtitles because both times Smellerby like appeared and started to talk, instead of writing Smellerby, they wrote girl.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, I was like,
that's fucking rude.
I'm so angry.
For like a affirming her gender, but like also she has a name. Like, I'm like, she has a name. Did you just not want to write Smeller Bee? So yeah, that's messed up.
The disrespect.
Absolute. I was like,
Netflix, the idea that the girl's entire identity is just girl and not their name.
I know. I literally wrote down Netflix. She has a name.
Yeah.
I was offended. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe the first time it was because she started speaking off screen. So then they were just like, it's a girl talking, you know, like they didn't, you don't know who it is. But then the second time they were on her and she started talking and it still said girl. Yeah. And I was like,
they just didn't care.
Who wrote this?
They don't even know.
No.
It was like whoever was making the subtitles was just like, fuck, what was that character's name again? Something weird. I don't remember. I'll just put girl. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to bother looking it up.
Oh, man. Poor Smeller Bee. She and Longshot tried really hard.
Yeah, they did.
And it was sad when they were just walking away when Jet got taken away. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It was so defeated.
Because I guess, you know, they like kind of saw it humming.
They tried. They tried to have an intervention.
They did. Yeah. And like part of me is like, I wonder if because they did that intervention, it's what like pushed him to double down a little bit.
Yeah.
Too, where immediately he was like, I'm going to take care of this right now.
And then he was like, fine, if no one's going to help me, not even the people I thought I could count on, I'm just going to have to do it myself and take drastic action right here, right now, in front of the cops.
Yeah. Their fight scene was like really good though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like rewatched it even before when we started doing the podcast and I realized I was going to not let myself watch ahead. I was like, I really want to rewatch that fight scene though. So I found it on YouTube. I like watched it like months ago.
Oh my God. When Jet was like, the Fire Nation is trying to silence me. And it was like, the Earth Kingdom is going to silence you.
Oh my God.
Irony. Mm-mm. Man.
Did anyone look up that hypnotism tactic?
No.
Like, I want to know, but I can look it up.
I was distracted by it because it was on, like, a metal rod, and it was moving, and I was like, I guess they're bending the earth bowl that the fire is in.
Mm.
But I was like, is it the sound of the metal? Because I was like, why would it be metal? Why wouldn't it be earth? Because then you can bend it. But I was like, is it, like, the sound? It's, like, not, like, get out
like
again.
Get out.
Like, is it this, I'm like, is it the specific sound of, like, the, of just, like, something that they use?
Yeah, I'm curious as well, because, like, I guess it's maybe a combination of all the things. Like, it is the light where it's, like, as you're aware of it, then they somehow, like, chant it, there is no war, and then it, like, goes away, and then that just becomes your sole focus. I don't know.
Yeah.
Weird.
Very weird.
Would you guys ever do hypnosis?
No.
When I was a youngster, at one point, one of our substitute teachers was like, I'm a hypnotist, and he, like, hypnotized the class.
What?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's substitute teachers, they just do whatever they want.
That's true.
So weird, though.
I'd have
sued. It was just, like, some weird thing with, like, making us raise our arms. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it was actually a muscle trick.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, actual hypnosis, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Like, I think, you know, he did it, like, to make us all freaked out. Like, oh my God, he mind controlled us. And I was like, I feel like he just made us, because he had us, like, squeeze something or something first.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm pretty sure this is just some sort of weird muscle trick. Like a magician, sleight of hand. Like, they make you think that they're making you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird seeing my arm just, like, raised by itself, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ay, ay, ay. But no, I wouldn't really purposefully volunteer for hypnosis.
Okay, so what are the things that we as dutiful podcast producers have to go out and experience? We have to go get our fortunes told together. We have to get Popeyes and then carve into the bones and then do our own fortunes.
Yes.
And then now we have to apparently get hypnotized.
I don't know if I'm on board for that one.
I'd be down.
No, Abby.
We have to try to fight it.
I've always wanted to, I feel like I have, because, like, you see, like, the ones on TV and stuff, and you're just like, well, no, this has to be staged. So then you're like, well, if I was the one, I would resist. And it's just like, what makes me think I have any more, like, mental fortitude?
That's like me trying really hard not to kick when the doctor would hit my knee. Like, you know, I'd just be like, no, I refuse. My body knows better than to betray me like this.
And then it's like, oh, it happened. You're like, dang it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, we also have to try and, like, cook some stuff.
Fire. Oh, hell yes.
We have to cook all the dishes that they eat in this show.
This is true.
The uncooked dough.
Yes.
No, not that one.
That is one of the recipes. Apparently in August, I'm saying, because I already told these three, but for the listeners, there's an official Avatar The Last Airbender cookbook that's coming out, and the recipes are being developed by this Asian-American chef. I'm trying to remember her name now. Jenny Dorsey, I think, something like that. But like we saw it and we got very excited, yeah. And we want to cook all the things because they all look very good. And also it'll be all of our speculating from someone who actually understands food science.
Yes. What is this like? Now we know.
Like, we got excited because we say there's no war in Pod Sing Se, but there is. It's a war on hunger.
There's
all
a food
we ever
war.
Do is talk about food.
There's a war on hunger. Oh my god.
My mom would always ask me, like, why would you meet up with your friends is, like, the only thing you do eat? I'm like, what else?
Is your mom acting like she doesn't do the same?
I'm a little offended at that question.
Hold on. I understand when my parents ask me, why would you meet up with your friends and watch TV? But why would you meet up with your friends and eat? Isn't that a normal thing?
Don't I know.
All gatherings of people?
I think it's more because I'm like, every time we would just, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to go meet whoever for dinner. And she's like, is that the only thing you do with your friends? Go and eat? I'm like, we do other things, but mostly eat.
Oh my god. My like snarky response to that was just like, even if like we were going to go do something, you do like go play backgammon or something. Like, you know, it's like we still care deeply about what snacks each person brings and we still discuss the snack options.
Yes. Oh man.
Backgammon.
I don't even know what backgammon is.
Really?
You've seen it.
I know, but I
wait. Does backgammon?
Which one is it?
Or is it a card?
I've played backgammon with my dad a lot.
Backgammon's not a card game. It's like dice, and then there's like a board, and there's like black and white pieces.
Is it the board that has the triangles?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, got it. I'm uncultured.
I don't know her.
Now I'm getting. I'm like, that is it, right?
I don't know.
I'm like, we have a board.
It. Yeah. Yeah. You. The goal is to get all your pieces from your home base into like the goal, which is on the opponent's side, so you have to move them all past them.
Yeah,
like you have all to right. You know, beat them there, but you but guys yeah. can like you can hinder each other's progress as you go along. Mm-hmm. Too
what's it called, what game, a game that we should learn how to play is that like rock paper scissors.
Oh yeah,
Avatar rock paper scissors.
Yeah, it looked like
apparently Earth beats fire. Is this just propaganda? Did the Fire Nation have a different version of this game
where
fire
I'm sure burning? Like
I think it's the Avatar cycle.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but then I'm like, does that mean like the opposite ones are like a tie then? How does it work? Because there's four, there's not just three.
I don't know, we gotta logic this out.
It don't matter.
There's only one way to find out.
Right now, go!
Okay. I was like, and that's looking up the rules.
No, I was just trying to remember, what was that thing Sokka said? Didn't he say something like rock beats air when Toph threw Aang into the wall in Bitter Work?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that's even relevant or if that was just like a one-off joke that they had, but it'd be fun if it did make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I laughed at that wasn't a joke, but like it was a joke for me in this moment.
Yes.
When the Dai Li was talking about how war isn't mentioned to keep citizens ignorant and compliant and to keep the economy going. Like, I just was like, but the economy! And I got really upset. And I just was like, I'm too old for this.
Too real.
And there was just like a peaceful, orderly utopia. Here we are free. And I was just like, I just like lost my shit with all the current stuff between like caring about the economy and masks being oppressive and everything. And like,
yeah,
I just, you know, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a month, guys.
Yeah. Yes, it has.
Yes.
It's like, I mean, I don't know when this episode is going to come out. Like,
but it'll still be true then.
It's been a month.
Yeah.
Yes. Damn. It almost seems like an appropriate episode for this for this month.
City of Wealth and Secrets.
Yes.
Yo.
Yeah.
Oh.
So many walls.
As a very random side note, at the very beginning when they get there and Toph was just like, ugh, cities. She's like, nothing but walls, rules. I was like, so Toph, you're just against all cities, apparently, huh? All cities. I was like, you're just a country soul. Like, you like the wide open spaces. Is home where your horse is, Toph? Are you like that character in a Hallmark movie who teaches the pessimistic city slicker to appreciate your small town in the holiday season? Like, and to love the simple life? Yeah. I was like, is this the Toph Sokka Hallmark at you? Like,
shut the hell up.
I'm glad you had a much more positive take on it. For me, I was just like, easy for you to say when you lived in like a fucking estate with like gates and shit, you know, where yeah. I was like, yeah, if you had to live in a city, Lord knows your family would have had like the penthouse suite and like you would have still had all the room that you wanted. Mm-hmm. So then like, I feel like my like irritation at her was like, it wasn't her fault, but I was still just like, check yourself, Toph.
Oh, man.
That made me think when they were first getting into the city. Mm-hmm. I forget what was actually said, but like Sokka said something and it kind of made me, oh, he was just like, oh, it's just like another city, like, you know, whatever, or something like that. And it's just like, even despite how much they've traveled the world, it's just like nothing in that world compares to Ba Sing Se.
No.
Where it was like, they were like completely unprepared because they're, oh yeah, because they were looking for, they were like, oh, how hard could it be to find Appa? And then like, they see like how vast it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just like,
oh, you simple no. country folk.
Yeah. And I feel like I was trying to think of like a similar, I'm like, I don't think I've ever had like that experience, like looking at a plane or something. I feel like the closest thing I had is like the more fucked up, like the first time I was like in the Caribbean and I saw like the galaxy for the first time because there wasn't like light pollution where it was like that. Where I'm like, oh, like I've never seen something like that before.
I had like the opposite when I moved to Japan because I went from like, you know, northern New Jersey, which is like, you know, pretty packed. And then I went to like the countryside and I was like, people live like this. I was like, I mean, on a positive note, I was like, wow, there's like so much nature.
Yeah.
And then I could see probably not as many stars as you could, but I was like, wow, look at how many stars there are up there. It's crazy. But yeah, I was like, wow, if I want to get to the next town, I have to take a train for 20 minutes. Like that was like, you know. So I guess you do kind of like, I don't know how this fits into the episode at all. It doesn't. It just, what you said just made me think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, I guess before I ask if anybody wants to say anything else, this episode was nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What?
For Outstanding Animated Program. For programming less than 1 hour.
It is a really good episode.
Yeah. It is a very good episode. As much as we said is really unsettling and creepy, like it does what it's trying to do really well. Because it makes you feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's it. Like, just to clarify, I feel like none of us think this is a bad episode despite our, like, negative feelings. Like, it's like, those are two different things.
Yeah. Like, the episode did what it was – the episode is trying to make you feel that way. Like,
yeah, it's a great episode.
Yeah, it's absolutely a great episode.
They did a good job of building the atmosphere. Like, it wasn't even, like – even though we're like, oh, my God, at the ending – it's not like it's unexpected, you know? Every aspect of it was built in from the first second.
Yeah.
And just Ba Sing Se in general, turning Ba Sing Se into its own character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not only there in the creepy dystopia aspect of it, but, you know, it has its own unique sort of, like, music and lighting, even. Like, there was a lot of green lights everywhere.
Yeah.
And some of them were like glowing green crystals, which I noted. And some of them were like actual lanterns, but they always had green, like a green paper in front of the fire or the like that kind of thing. It was just all very eerie. They even had green fire. And I was like, okay.
Like, now I'm just thinking about the Emerald City and how the Emerald City was also just like an illusion. Like, I think it's in the
book. Is this the Wizard of Oz?
Because in the movie, I think everything is just actually green. I don't remember now. But in the books, like, nothing is actually green. They just make everybody wear green glasses. So then they think everything is green.
Yo, that's fucked up.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it is in the book. I can't remember about the movie now. But, yeah. So now, Nicole saying that made me think of that. Like, it's the whole... illusion of one thing, like you think the city is this like utopia, like safe haven, and underneath that veneer it's really not. Like, it's more dangerous for some people like Jet than it is outside.
And I feel like that's just like the nature. It's like utopia and dystopia are obviously like the same sides of the same coin. And it's just like nothing can be one without it also being the other, sort of. That's a whole other thing that I feel like we'll only get into more as we learn more about Ba Sing Se.
Right.
Also, because I don't want to start now because, like, we're, like, wrapping up.
At the end, We've been talking too long already. So before we wrap up, is there anything anybody else wanted to talk about? No?
No.
All right. So What are we thinking for MVPs this episode?
Oh, God. I forgot to think about that.
I might have to give it to Jet just because, like, he was right. Yeah. And I felt like it sucks to be in that position. Mm-hmm. And I never like watching that character in any movie or any TV show where you're like the town crier. And then the one time you're right, of course, is the time that
literally no one's going
to there to support you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he gets fucking brainwashed. And it's like, that's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
So I don't even know if that's like the MVP because like he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But everyone else was like, whatever. I don't know. Yeah.
I feel like mine was Iroh because I felt like, again, he's always putting like Zuko ahead of himself. And, mm-hmm. and we talked about it a little when they first got to Ba Sing Se that like kind of hides how he's actually must be feeling about coming back to this place. And like how much he's trying to like just throw himself into having a new normal. Is something that, like, I can appreciate. Even if in his brain he knows, like, this is probably only going to last, like, 5 months, but, like, whatever. It's, like, he's still, like, going for it and, like, trying. And, like, obviously he's motivated by T, but still.
Yeah.
And I just like the, like, he said something to Zuko of just, like, you know, like, life happens wherever you are. And I just, like, I appreciated that. And I appreciated him probably knowing he has to try that much harder with, like, having someone like Zuko around.
Right. What about you, Nicole?
Maybe I'll piggyback off Abby. Like, Jet, it's true. It really sucks when nobody believes you. When authority figures don't believe you, even though you know that you're telling the truth. Like, I get why no one believed him, but it sucks. And having personally been in a position semi like that, obviously not on the same scale, on at least two separate occasions in the past, I'm like, ugh, God, why? Stop bringing up these emotions in me.
Yeah. I guess I was a little torn between giving it to Iroh for like the same reasons as Jen. And then also just like I felt him found him very relatable in this episode with how passionate he was about tea.
When he said tea was like breathing.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, we know it's true coming from Iroh who literally tries to die for tea. Like,
yeah. But then also I kind of wanted to give it to Smellerby and Longshot. Because, you know, they were trying to be there for Jet and, like, trying to get him back on the right path. And, like, it didn't work, obviously, but that effort was there. And, like, you can tell how much they care about him. Like, they're a little family unit. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. That really sucks, too, obviously.
Yes. So what about favorite lines or moments?
I just love the Jet-Zuko fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from a choreography point of view and, like, animation. I'm like, this is a solid chunk of action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had two favorite moments. One was a line, and it was the line that you just said, Jen. It was like, life happens where it's like,
life happens wherever you are, whether you make it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's true. And I hate that. So I was like, that's like too real. And then the other part that I liked was just Zuko being so over tea.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we're at the apartment, and like, we work at a fucking tea shop and you sold a fucking drink tea. It was just so funny. Oh. He was so over it. And then, sorry, I have a third moment too. Uh-huh. It was when Iroh brought flowers.
Yes.
And he's like, in case you bring a girl home. Oh. I'm like, oh my God.
And then Zuko was like, this city is a prison.
Oh, trapped with Uncle even more than before.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yo, like, his face when Uncle was like, the secret ingredient. Is love.
Just like to like pop in, like literally all of those moments are my favorite. Like Iroh and Zuko, this episode were my favorite. Just
it was
so funny. Especially the like, this city is a prison, and his face. After
Zuko's face, I wrote down Zuko's face in my notes like twice in a row because of the Uncle secret ingredient is love thing. I was like, Zuko's face in all caps, and then my next note. It's again Zuko's face, but that was because when Jet bursts in, his face was like the emoticon giant... that's like colon slash. My favorite line is probably the, this tea is nothing but hot leaf juice. Because that line has stuck with me throughout like my entire life. Ever since I first saw this episode, all the time, every time that I accidentally make myself tea that I overbrew or something, I'm always just like, this tea is nothing but hot leaf juice. But then my favorite moment has got to be, again, like, this is, you know, this episode, a lot of things from this episode, they stick with you over years of even not watching the show.
Yeah.
And the entire, just the entire closing with the reveal with intercutting Jet being dragged into the room while he talks about Utopia and, like, silencing talk of conflict, and then the second Judy coming in, like, oh, it just chills you to the bone.
No wonder they give you, like, the upper that is the Tales of Bossing Say, minus the one story that's not actually fun, okay?
Yo, I'm, like, kind of mad that it's not continuing. Like, I don't want the buffer at this time, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Patience is a virtue.
I'll say they're just, they're building up the anticipation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tales of Bossing Say, Abby?
No, I think I haven't seen any of the Bossing Say episodes. I've never seen any of this to my memory.
Bless.
Nice. So we don't know.
That's exciting. We'll find out.
Yes.
We'll find out.
Yes. And on that note, this has been Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. Join us next week when we talk about Book 2, Chapter 15, The Tales of Bossing Say. I don't remember what I say after that. So,
girl!
Wait and subscribe.
Yeah. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting platforms.
Okay. And be sure to leave a rating if you haven't already. Bye.
Bye. Stephanie.
Bye.